Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
We welcome on Dr. Tom Russo, Chief of Infectious Disease at UB's Jacobs School of Medicine, talking about what the FDA is talking about today as they hold their meeting on booster shots, that independent FDA advisory committee discussing Pfizer's booster shot. We'll make a recommendation to the FDA perhaps as soon as today. Dr. Russo, thanks for being with us once again. You know, on this booster conversation, I kind of feel like we're skipping a step in the entire conversation, which is a question that hasn't been answered, and I feel like should be the starting point, whether it's by the president or anyone else who talks about boosters, and that is, what do we want or what do we expect the vaccine to do? Because if the goal of a vaccine is to prevent serious illness and death in most people, which is what I thought, then, I mean, the question was, why would boosters be needed? But you might get a different answer if your goal is to have a vaccine that makes no one ever get infected. But that question and the answer to it, I feel like really hasn't been clearly stated, and now we're in a state of confusion.
Yeah. Well, we've been talking about it here, Brian, so I think we're doing a good job. So, and I think actually that question, and it was quite aptly stated, is going to be the answer to that question is going to be slightly different depending on which group of individuals you discuss. So let's talk what I feel is the most important thing, as I think you do as well. What we're asking of our vaccine is to prevent serious disease and keeping people out of hospital and minimizing bad outcomes. And that's going to apply to the overwhelming majority of Americans. And in this booster discussion, so Pfizer is asking for the booster to be approved for 16-year-olds and up. However, what we know in terms of a third shot or booster or whatever semantics you want to use, there are some individuals that could probably benefit from that third shot. The immunocompromised, for which it's already been approved. But I think likewise, there's a reasonable body of data now that suggests our seniors, people that are 65 and older, would likely benefit. And this is based on two pieces of data. It's based on the fact that who right now that's fully vaccinated is ending up in hospital and occasionally having a bad outcome, and it's the immunocompromised and our seniors, particularly those with underlying disease. And then data that just came out of Israel that was published in the New England Journal of Medicine yesterday supported that they've already started to institute boosters, and they showed a benefit for serious disease in people that were 60 and older that received the vaccine 5 months earlier. So by far, I think that's sort of the most important thing. With regards to then preventing more minor, you know, infections such as asymptomatic infection or, you know, minor respiratory tract infection symptoms, one group that may benefit are healthcare workers, because if healthcare workers get infected, then they need to isolate, and that is going to deplete the workforce. So I suspect today, with probably some spirited discussions, those two groups are going to be first and foremost.
All right. Pfizer is first. So now my question is, are they going to, if it's approved, which is expected, are they going to say 16 and up, you can go ahead and schedule your booster shot? Or will they start by saying seniors and healthcare workers and then work their way down?
I believe the latter. At least that's what I feel should be done, Susan. They haven't always been listening to us, have they? But I think those are the groups that would most benefit. You know, we've already got the immunocompromised recommended and authorized to have that third shot. And I think now we're talking about seniors and healthcare workers. I do not favor immunizing or giving a third shot to everyone that's 16 years old and up. And I think many infectious disease physicians and vaccine experts are in that same camp.
It's a tricky situation to have publicly. I was actually just reading a interesting piece on this on that med page today, not specifically on boosters, but on this idea that something that's good for one person is not necessarily good for the entire population, right? That there's going to be a different weighing of pros and cons of, you know, everything when it comes to people across the board, because people are different. They're not all the same. You've been involved in this public discussion. You've done, you know, many media interviews. You've seen the discussion as it's unfolding online. It seems like less and less there is an ability for people to have nuance on this. It's just, you know, well, two doses plus a booster of the vaccine, or else you're anti-vax. Or if you have something, you know, the other way, a lot of people are questioning the entire thing completely, and you're in the other camp or something like that. I mean, are we going to have the ability to have the nuance to say, well, a booster for these specific people, not necessarily everybody, even though that's what we heard from the president a month ago?
I hope so. I mean, you know, medicine is very individualized, you know, obviously trying to do the best you can for an entire country. You know, you can't have too many permutations or it becomes too complicated to enact that particular strategy. But I really think we need to make rational decisions. And, you know, for our seniors, just to emphasize, I think what we're talking about, there's a reasonable body of data suggests that they never had as good a response as younger individuals did to the first round of their vaccine shots. That response was good enough with the initial variants that were circulating, but then when Delta showed up, Delta was a little bit more resistant, and perhaps with a little bit of waning of that antibody response over time with those seniors as well, they've been somewhat exposed. But, you know, Brian, I fully agree with you. We need to try to individualize this as best we can from a pragmatic point of view where we could, you know, efficiently execute the plan.
Pfizer is discussing a full dose for the booster. Moderna is discussing a half dose. Why is it different between the two?
The initial dose from Moderna was 100 micrograms, and the initial dose from Pfizer was 30 micrograms. And they're very similar in terms of they both sort of carry code for the virus that's encapsulated in these nanoparticles. Moderna has some recent data that suggests that lower doses will elicit the same response as that higher 100 microgram dose. They've looked at both 50 and 25 micrograms. And remember, so far it looks good from Israel. There seems to be no ill consequences from this third shot. But obviously, individuals could have these reactogenic symptoms we've talked about when they get vaccinated. So, you know, if you could get the same response with the lower dose that may diminish those reactogenic symptoms, that obviously would be great. So that's what they're sorting out right now, if they could get less reactogenic symptoms and the same immune response.
We're speaking with Dr. Tom Russo of the Jacobs School of Medicine. I don't know if this is a question specifically to boosters, but it's one that I think there's confusion on as well. And that is, you know, more and more when I read a lot of the talk online about immunity, people seem to have different definitions. What do we mean by immunity? There's a lot of people who point to, you know, a certain level of antibodies. And then you have a lot of other people who are pointing out, well, that's only part of the picture. What about certain memories stored inside of cells? Even as antibodies wane, you could still be immune because of that. How should we think of immunity?
We should think of immunity as the full picture that you just outlined, Brian. We're going to give you an A for immunology this morning. Well done. So there's both our antibodies, but there's also our cellular response. And they both work together, and that cellular response is particularly important because that contains what we call memory cells. So even though antibodies may decrease over time, when an individual then is exposed to a particular infectious agent, if you have those memory cells, they'll quickly crank out both antibodies and they'll also activate the kill cells that are infected, in this case, with a particular virus. They're both critically important. The cellular response is much more difficult to both measure, and it's a little bit more challenging to sort out its relative role in protection. And so antibodies are most commonly followed, but they're not the whole story.
Dr. Tom Russo from the Jacobs School of Medicine is our guest, chief of infectious disease there. Want to switch the focus just a little bit, Dr. Russo, on some of the other big news this week, and that is, once again, the state saying in all daycare, childcare facilities, children as young as 2 years old will have to wear a mask, something that was talked about 4 months ago, reversed, and now it's coming back again. You know, we've spoken with a lot of daycare operators, and I'm wondering if this is also a situation where, you know, like the boosters, there's a lot of different things at play. What's good for some people is not good for the entire population. One quote stood out to me as we talked to Colvin Brighton Childcare earlier this morning, and the operator there said that if I thought it was accomplishing something, I'd be all for it. But over whether it's the last 4 months when we've been dealing with Delta or the last year and a half at her daycare and at daycares across the entire region, they've really seen no problem when it comes to COVID in younger kids inside of a daycare setting. I'm wondering what the right way to go about this is, and are we ignoring maybe some of the other aspects when we're really talking about the youngest children here and wearing masks inside of daycare?
Well, I have a couple of thoughts on that. First off, focusing just on the children themselves. The great news has been that when children get infected, the immediate consequences are obviously less severe, less likely to be hospitalized, less likely to have a bad outcome, though they're not absolutely bulletproof. And unfortunately, we've had a number of pediatric deaths due to this COVID pandemic. And that's always tragic when that happens to young children. But I think that you have to look beyond the immediate consequences, because there's many unknowns about this virus. And there's both the long haulers that occur less commonly in children, but can occur, and those symptoms could be quite debilitating. But I think most importantly, is there going to be consequences where if you're infected, you have some cryptic or occult damage to a variety of organs, and then the actual physiological clinical manifestations of that won't appear for years or decades. And so we've talked about this, and that's why I think the best strategy is to try to avoid getting infected, whatever age you are, particularly children that have their whole lifetime ahead of them. And, you know, obviously, since they cannot get vaccinated, then mitigation measures indoors, such as masks, are our next best level of protection. But then beyond the individual health benefits, of course, children have the ability, if they get infected, they're often asymptomatic, to spread it to others so they could go ahead and propagate this Delta wave that we're seeing right now. And, you know, children under 12 are the largest. Obviously, they're not eligible, so that's a large group of people that could potentially get infected and spread the virus, and infections in them are increasing at the greatest rate.
Along the same lines, with the prevalence of RSV that we've talked about before, and, you know, one of the things that we've talked about is this is happening so much earlier than normal. Is part of that maybe because of an immune deficiency of kids being isolated or, you know, wearing masks and things like that? Is there any concern over that? I mean, daycare, I was told by, you know, my first pediatrician visit with my son that, you know, well, your kid's going to go to daycare and he's probably going to get sick within a couple of weeks, and then he'll get sick a couple more times, and that's kind of just what happens, and that's part of growing up almost. Is there any concern on that part?
It really isn't, because masks will obviously mitigate infections from other respiratory viruses. And RSV is most lethal in younger children. And so if you sort of punt down the road with the, you know, mask measures at this time, primarily directed for COVID, you know, you remain immunologically naive and you're going to be susceptible to infection when you're a little bit older, that's really not going to have any increased health consequences.
All right. Also, Dr. Russo, there's been a lot of reaction this week to the new vaccine mandate at Highmark Stadium and KeyBank Center. We know you're a sports fan. What do you think of this, and is it a model for other arenas?
Yeah, I'm obviously in favor of that vaccine mandate from a public health point of view. It's the safest thing to do. We saw the honor system didn't work very well. 60% of people here in Erie County are fully vaccinated, and you know, there is very few masks that we're seeing, and those that we're seeing were mostly serving as chin straps. And so, you know, we've had ample supply of vaccine, ample time, and there's that, you know, not so significant minority that is yet to be fully vaccinated, and that's keeping this pandemic going. And so I think vaccine mandates are going to serve multiple purposes. It's going to keep us safe in multiple venues, and it's going to ultimately hasten the end of this pandemic, which all of us would love to see.
If we go a month and there isn't much spread attributed to that packed stadium, you know, 70,000 people all screaming on top of each other at the Bills game, if we don't see any sort of spike, if we can't really say that that was a contributor to spread, would you be in favor of revisiting that mandate?
Well, obviously. And I think once we drive our number of cases down, and we convert this virus, which is sort of still in the last throes of pandemic mode, into sort of respiratory virus endemic mode like influenza, which I think eventually is going to be the process, then I think we could start to revert back to how we used to live. But unfortunately, we just can't shake this Delta wave. And it's very interesting when you look at the data across the world in certain states. You know, countries that have taken this wave seriously, like Japan, that took a hit because of the Olympics, their Delta curve is heading straight down. Hawaii is another state where they said, don't come to Hawaii. We're going to, you know, 50% capacity, mandatory masks indoors. Their Delta wave is going straight down. And other states where it says, okay, we sort of trust people what to do, we're sort of just lingering at this plateau, and we just can't quite turn the corner. And that's really what's happening here in Western New York. So, you know, our behavior is so critical. Obviously, getting shots in arms is really the long-term key. But on the short term, we just have to gather ourselves and do a little bit better and avoid those risky situations that really try to turn the corner on this situation.
Dr. Russo, thanks so much. Dr. Tom Russo, Chief of Infectious Disease at the Jacobs School of Medicine.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. T-Mobile.com.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.